What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Fellas, you're missing out. Secret CFL player car wash going on at an unknown location in Hamilton. I miss being with you guys. I just miss you guys. That's the main thing I want to get across.
We miss you too, Dunk.
Yes, we miss you as well. And next time there's a car wash, invite the stinky cheese so that he can get a little bit scrubbed up, get a little bit clean, and we'll all be better off for it.
See, when I hear car wash, I just think like boogie shorts and like really soapy, like nothing like that's going on, right, Doc? You're not,
JC. This is a PG-13 podcast.
That zip up.
No,
unzip. I don't want.
It's only a quarter zip. Just take it a quarter of the way.
Scandalous.
The first quarter is free. After that, you got to pay.
Yeah, exactly. And I broke stuff. I think we're all good here, hopefully.
You dropped your mic? What happened?
Yeah, man. Hey, all bets are off when JC's asking for a little more skin.
Hey, he dropped the mic. Now he's got to bend over to pick it up. It's all very salacious.
It's all part of the plan. There you go. There you go.
That's why the backdrop has changed, fellas. So I just thought I'd give a little insight for anyone wondering. And if you're listening to this pod, keep it locked, as you always should, to 3downnation.com, because we're going to have a bunch of one-on-one interviews with some key players, dare I say superstars, in the Canadian Football League. Let's get to what we're discussing today. John Hodges' second 2025 CFL mock draft.
Calgary unveiling the details for the first ever Stampede Bowl.
Josh Banks retiring after four seasons in BC.
The Riders signing a player who once tried to sue the NFL.
And the Blue Bombers turning a $7 million profit in 2024. But first,
Dunk, in a sit-down interview with Trevor Harris, he told you that he played half of the 2024 season with a partially torn ACL. What can you tell us about it, and what are your expectations for Harris in 2025?
In terms of your first question, that was news to me because it had been widely reported and from Trevor Harris's own mouth that he had suffered an MCL sprain, but we didn't know about the ACL part. And what was most interesting to me is Harris, and he's always so articulate with this stuff, talking about advancements in surgical procedures or in non-surgical procedures in this instance, and saying that ACL tears that are less than 50% actually now, depending how you view it, potentially don't require surgery to end somebody's season, and that it's actually viewed by some medical professionals being better off for the athletes to rehab it and let it heal on its own, which is what Trevor Harris did as he was going through the season in terms of when he was out and coming back into the lineup. So that was really intriguing to me to hear the fact that he was dealing with this, came back after six games and played through it. Now he says he's fully healthy now, has had a healthy off season. The other part that stuck out to me was he wore Jordan Nike cleats last year, and his equipment guy in Saskatchewan has recommended what Trevor Harris dubbed old man cleats that could potentially help protect his feet, knees, and some of his other joints. Stuff's going all over here, boys. Sorry about that. For the coming season. So, Hodge, I think you know what the exact brand of cleats are, and it'll be interesting to see if he actually does wear them. It sounds like he will, and if other older players or perhaps younger players start wearing them too.
Your setup is falling apart like an aging football player, Dunk. Just stuff falling all over the place, going by the wayside. This is a mess, but it's all good. You're on the scene, which I think fans of the podcast appreciate. That being said, yes, these are cleats that were popularized by Joe Flacco, and you have it in your column, Dunk, the way in which these cleats have a little bit of mobility, and the thought is that that can help save some of the wear and tear for aging players. And it has happened before, right? We just saw that Curtis Rourke at Indiana played the 2024 season with a torn ACL. I don't think there are a ton of possibilities for players who are at DB or receiver to play with serious ligament tears or partial tears to play a full season. But if you're a quarterback, especially if it's in your left knee, which it was for the case of Trevor Harris, as a right-handed quarterback, presumably that left knee, it's not like you're making quick cuts or coming out of your breaks constantly as a quarterback, and you're not pushing off that front leg to throw 30, 40, 50, 60-yard passes on a rope. So I do think that this is kind of an intriguing advancement. I believe there are other quarterbacks who have done this in the CFL. I don't believe it's been reported, but there was one in Winnipeg maybe 7, 8 years ago who I think played most of the season with a partially or fully torn ACL. So there are times where this has been done. I think it's neat, and as long as guys are comfortable with it and making an informed decision about whether they do get the surgery or whether they don't, I think that's exciting. And as for the second part of this question, I think the sky's the limit for Trevor Harris in 2025. I really think that the Riders have a star-studded receiving core. Their Canadians are great. Their Americans are up and coming. Sean Bain Jr. expected to be back and healthy. There's depth there. And I know that Trevor Harris is someone who takes very few sacks, and that's because he makes such good, quick decisions with the football. And if he's able to continue doing that in 2025, he's in the second year of the Mark Mueller system. I thought that was a highlight of the interview you and him did, Dunk, where he said this is the first time since 2018 that he's returning to the same offensive system for a second season, not having to learn something entirely new for the following year. So between his physical health, the mental hurdles that he's not having to leap over by returning to the same offensive system, I think that Trevor Harris could be right at the top of the CFL in 2025 in terms of passing. Obviously, Bo Levi Mitchell's coming off a great year. Zach Collaros had a great second half to his season. Chad Kelly will presumably be available for all of 2025, but I'd put Trevor Harris right up there with anybody, even Nathan Rourke, who we're expecting to get back to his 2022 stature.
I totally agree with you, Hodge, and it's worth remembering just how good Trevor Harris was down the stretch last year, even while battling through these injuries. It sort of got lost in the context of the whole season, because when you look at the stats overarching, he missed all that time, and therefore they don't look that impressive. But when we were entering into the playoffs, he was playing as good a football as anybody in the CFL at that point. And we need to remember that he has not shown those signs of age when he's been on the field. Now, the big if is whether he can consistently stay on the field, because as much as we want to give him kudos for the toughness of being able to play through this, this is just yet another thing that's added to the list of recent injuries for Trevor Harris as a guy who's not getting any younger, who is pushing 40, that will be cause for concern, and that's going to be the thing that drops him in some people's eyes in the quarterback ranking. But if he can stay upright and stay healthy for a full season or the majority of a season, I think with the pieces around him in Ryderville, he could do just about anything and potentially lead this team to a Grey Cup game and maybe even a championship win.
Just to tie up a couple nuggets here, Gordon Gilroy is Saskatchewan's equipment manager, and the cleats are called Caddx cleats, if anyone's curious about it. And Trevor Harris even joked that if he wears the cleats, he might see Trevor Vick, which was pretty funny. He laughed himself. And if you look at his rushing totals last year, you know, we all know that he's not necessarily, I don't want to say fleet of foot, but he's not a guy that takes off and runs. So, you know, more to JC's second question there, I would agree with you guys. I think there's a lot of upside with Trevor Harris. And one of the other notes that we talked about was, you know, JC, he made your nursing home column last year. He'll probably be there again because of his age, but relative to his age, he's rather young from a football standpoint because he really didn't start playing as a professional until he was 29 years old, guys. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a real key here for me. And I look at the injuries, and yes, those question marks are going to be there as to whether he can get through an entire season. And he's talked about that himself multiple times. But like, those are like freak injury type things. I don't think he's an injury prone type player, but ultimately he knows his best ability is availability. And I asked him flat out, is MOP on your goal career list, let's say? And he said, you know, anybody that says that it's not is just essentially fooling you, as I'm paraphrasing his answer. And he said, it would be cool. Anyone would want to be, you know, MOP or MVP of a league, but he feels like that comes potentially as a byproduct of being a contending team, you know, ultimately getting to what he called the North Star, another word or another term, I should say, for the Grey Cup. So I'm really curious to see how the year plays out. As you guys noted, that offensive system being with Mark Mueller again, you know, for the first time since 2018, like people just sometimes think about, and I talk about it sometimes on the podcast, these athletes being robots. But that is going to be, I think, huge in the fact that the receiving group there is largely intact. Yes, Jarris Stearns left in free agency, but he was having trouble getting on the roster when that group was healthy anyways. And then you got AJ Ouellette and his body transformation. You had Sean McCune on the offensive line, Mike Rose, Tavon Campbell on defense. Like, there's a lot of continuity in Saskatchewan, and I can understand why there has already been some buzz about Trevor Harris being one of the favorites to win MLP. But ultimately, he knows he's got to stay healthy on the field, whether he's wearing Air Jordan cleats that I think add to his swag points, or the Caddx cleats, which might actually help him stay on the field longer, doesn't necessarily matter. He knows he just has to stay available.
My only criticism of what Harris said is I wish he'd said Trevor Allen, aka Damon Allen, because Damon Allen had a lot more career rushing yards than Michael Vick did. And the other thing is Damon Allen quite famously won MOP when he was, I think, exactly 40. Now, Harris is going to turn 39 in May. He wouldn't be the oldest MOP, but he'd be darn near close if he were to win it. And wouldn't that be neat if he did? And by the way, the other thing that I think is working to Trevor Harris's advantage is he is exactly the type of prototypical quarterback you'd want playing into his late 30s and 40s, right? He is a pocket passer who's got some pocket quickness. He's got some pocket elusivity, if you want to call it that, some elusiveness. But he's not somebody who holds onto the ball for a long time. He makes quick decisions with the ball. And he's somebody who I think is built well to play late into his years, be it when he's 40, 42, whatever. We'll see how much longer Trevor Harris plays. I think he could honestly play another 3-4 years if he really wants to. A quick housekeeping note from last week. JC and I both remembered seeing the Montreal Alouettes Mark Waitman press release mentioning a woman. We have now confirmed that Renee Masson, who has got a background in finance, has been at the Alouettes since 2020, and is now their senior vice president, chief operating officer, and chief financial officer, is a man, as is Andre Brousseau, who is the Alouettes executive committee chair and also the team's representative on the CFL's board of governors. So both of those people are men. We just wanted to get that right because Renee and Andre are both fairly gender-neutral names. We should have confirmed that before last week's show. But we've got those details ironed out. I looked them both up on LinkedIn. We're good to go. We're confirmed. We got that factually correct.
The other housekeeping housekeeping item, excuse me, that I want to tidy up is, you know, I believe Danny Machocho was put in a difficult spot to even go out and do that press conference. I don't think he was supported well enough by the organization. And I think I went too far and crossed the line by calling him a liar without having some of the context. So I apologize for that comment and take it back. I usually try to stick the football in this podcast and reporting as a professional and not try to go too much into opinion or go down that rabbit hole. So I apologize for that. You know, I think Danny Machocha was doing his best in a difficult situation in that press conference where I think he was actually pretty honest. And I feel like that got lost in me going on a little bit of a mini rant about how I feel like sometimes people in the CFL are not necessarily being as truthful as perhaps they could when talking to the media. So I apologize for that, and we'll try to be better for it in the future. What do we got next here, boys? John Hodges' CFL mock draft that he puts hours and hours and hours into, and 2.0 has come out, and it was almost a surprise. Hodge, like, I feel like this is earlier than usual for your mock 2.0. Is that right, or is it about the same time as years in the past?
That's a good question. I don't remember the date where last year's 2.0 came out. It might have been a little further on. Last year, I kind of changed the timeline because I put one out before the combine, and I kept doing that this year because I feel like one of the things fans struggle with the combine is they don't know who a lot of these players are. So they kind of want to understand, like, okay, this guy's like a projected second-round pick. This guy's a projected first-round pick. This guy's a projected fifth-round pick or whatever. They want to kind of have that context and understanding. So that's why I started putting out 1.0 before combine and doing a 2.0 post-combine. I did not have an update to 2.0 last year, and I ended up getting 8 of the 9 first-round picks correct. Not all of them were to the perfect team, but of the 9 players taken in round one last year, I had 8 players mocked in round one. I was very happy with that. This year, we'll see if there's a 3.0. If there is a 3.0, it'll be very shortly
before the NFL draft.
And that's if the NFL draft. Well, that's if stuff changes. I'm not putting up 3.0 if it's 99% the same as 2.0. That's my point. But I did keep Connor Shea, linebacker out of Wyoming, in the number one spot. I polled a ton of CFL draft experts over the last while, and the 4 names that kept coming up for being in the mix for Calgary, the speculation anyway from people from other teams, was that it could be Connor Shea, it could be Keelan White, the receiver out of Montana, and it could be Darian Newell, the defensive tackle out of Queens. The other name that, after a great pro day, has been cropping up is Hayden Harris, the defensive lineman out of Montana. I don't think it's a coincidence that 2 of those players from Montana, where Dave Dickinson is literally in the Hall of Fame. He was a standout with the Grizzlies, won a ton of awards during his playing days back in the day before he became a CFL star and later eventually a Canadian Football Hall of Fame member. But I have kept Connor Shea there for the meantime. And my logic is, I believe that is the biggest area of need for the Stampeders, assuming, of course, that they will be starting a Canadian weak side linebacker. Fraser Sopik is a guy they brought over in free agency. I think they need to improve their depth there. And I think Connor Shea, with some of the comparisons that he's drawn to Alex Singleton, could be a good fit. Underneath that, Darian Newell has stayed at number 2. Ottawa, I've got taking Keelan White. Keelan White, the comparison is the Philpotts. He did not blow up the testing at Montana. He didn't test poorly, but the testing numbers weren't sensational. And size-wise, testing-wise, he very much tests like the Philpotts. He plays like the Philpotts. And believe it or not, he's the same age as the Philpotts. He's 24 years old. The Philpotts, they grew up together. Exactly. So I think if Ottawa could wind back the clock a little bit, they probably would have taken Jalen or Tyson Philpott with that first overall pick they had in 2022. Here they get a second crack at it to bring in Keelan White as a great depth player for now and potential future starter. I've got Hayden Harris at 5 to the Riders. And then I've got Christophe Fortin out of UConn to the Montreal Alouettes. I think the Alouettes need that offensive lineman. Fortin did not blow up the testing at his pro day, but it was solid enough. And I think in a relatively thin offensive line class, he has separated himself as the best currently available option, assuming that Tiger Shanks is going to get an NFL look. And certainly he is the best now fit for a Montreal team that plays their Canadians along the interior. Shanks might be a tackle-only guy. Fortin is a career guard with the Huskies and I think is close to being ready to be a CFL starter. Might need 1 year of grooming, and then he'll be in that starting lineup. And if you look at what Liam Dobson signed for, if you look at the money that Logan Ferland got, I think there's a number of teams in the CFL going, whoa, if these guards are going to be getting 210, 230, 250, maybe it makes sense to pluck a kid who you think can start maybe the second and third year of that rookie deal and save a ton of money against the cap. So that's the top five picks. We'll turn it over to JC. Maybe you can give us some thoughts on some of the other selections that you think are too high or too low, or I'm guessing totally bang on, because this mock draft is probably perfect in your eyes.
Well, when it comes to bang on, I think those top five picks, you did an exceptional job identifying team needs and identifying some really solid fits. The big question mark for me is that number one. I think Calgary can go in a number of directions. And in terms of the two Montana kids, where there is smoke, sometimes there is fire. And it should be noted that, yes, Montana is fairly accessible from Calgary in terms of a drivable distance, but they were the only CFL team with two people at the Montana Pro Day. And one of those was John Bowman, who worked out Hayden Harris specifically along the defensive line. For those of you who've never been to a Pro Day or don't know exactly what goes on there, typically a coach or a scout will run the positional drills and workouts for a player. Most often that's either a coach at the school or an NFL guy. So the fact that John Bowman, a CFL legend, a Stampeders coach, was the person to take on that role, I think there is some significance there. And by all accounts, Hayden Harris answered the bell. His numbers are great, and he's put on about 10 pounds of pure muscle since I spoke to him in January at the College Gridiron Showcase. He is looking svelte with nice big shoulders, everything you want to see from a prospect. So I think he's in the mix at one. And I think if the Riders got him at four and brought back somebody who still has family in that Regina area, whose grandfather was an RCMP officer in that city, whose grandmother was a longtime nurse in that city, who are Rider fans, I think that would be an exceptional fit as well.
How have we gone?
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
On this far, talking about a CFL mock draft, with the best Canadian quarterback draft class ever, and you guys haven't mentioned it. Give your head.
This is the interesting
fellas.
Thing.
We're leaving it up to you.
Well, this is the interesting thing. When you talk, no, it's a good question, because when you talk to people around the league, most of them seem to believe that the two top quarterbacks, who are Taylor Elgersbaugh, of course, and Wilfrid Laurier, and Curtis Rourke out of Indiana. By the way, one of these times I'm going to say Nathan Rourke. Just know it's Curtis who's coming out of the draft. Nathan is not draft eligible this year. He has been a pro for a long time. Those two people still believe will go in the second round, generally. But they've all said the same thing, which is that none of them would be surprised if somebody took them in round one. And with both of these guys projecting as eventual CFL starters, like a lot of scouts seem skeptical that Elgersma or Rourke are going to get long, long NFL shots. Like a lot of teams think like these are guys you might get under contract by 2026 or 2027. And if they project as CFL starters, and let's remember, if they're down south, it's not like that draft pick is for nothing because they're getting NFL coaching and presumably some NFL reps. They're getting better without you being the team that has to invest that time, energy, resources into making that player better. Then by the time they come up, they might be ready to contribute. Maybe not as a starter year one, but be a primary backup year one and then a starter year two. If that's the case, I wouldn't be surprised either if a team takes them round one. You could even make an argument, honestly, if you think a quarterback is that great, you could take him first overall, even though you don't get him right away. And all the stamps are on the record saying that they want a now guy, someone who's going to be in camp with that number one pick. But you could even make an argument that it's not crazy for the Stampeders to take a quarterback at one. So to me, that will be the most interesting part of this draft. I do not have a quarterback going round one right now, but I do have the quarterbacks going back-to-back at 15 and 16 to Winnipeg and Toronto, respectively. It wouldn't surprise me if the quarterbacks went very close to one another because as soon as one goes off the board, everybody knows that next one, depending on what happens with the NFL, is probably not going to be available for long. And you could even potentially see a trade up. Somebody saying, hey, if one goes at X spot, we're trading for that next pick, whatever we need to do to move up and get that passer. If you really want him, there are, again, quarterback historically is essentially a non-factor in the draft. That's changed the last few years, of course, with guys like Nathan Rourke, Trey Ford, even Michael O'Connor. This year, it's ratcheted another level up. You could see two guys go in the first round, which even 3 or 4 years ago would be unthinkable. Now it's very much a possibility, but I have mocked them in round two. I honestly can't wait to see where they end up going.
Yeah, there's a lot to still be played out here. Obviously, JC, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think the CFL talent evaluators and decision makers here are entering into such uncharted waters that they may ultimately be making a mistake at the quarterback position if they let these guys slip into round two. We see it every year with the NFL draft, right? The quarterback position has to be evaluated differently in terms of where you place them in a draft order because it is so valuable if you can hit on one, right? Even if you're waiting 2, even 3 years for these guys, if you are grabbing a high caliber CFL starter who is a Canadian, the thing that that can do for your franchise, those are pipe dreams, right, in a typical year. Now you've got two of those guys who you could potentially hit on in that category. To me, you have to draft those guys in the first round. You cannot let them slip into round two. You cannot wait around on that. It's the same sort of deal as guys who are maybe not first-round quarterbacks talent-wise, but get taken in the top 10 picks in the NFL because there's just not that many guys available. We're seeing it play out with Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders this year where most scouts will tell you they're sort of second round quarterbacks based on talent, but they're going to go off the board early because teams need that position. CFL teams need quarterbacks too. They should be willing to wait for them if they are of that caliber. And to me, to have them in that 15 or 16 slot, which is where Nathan Rourke went back in the day, I think is a mistake because Nathan Rourke at the time was not viewed nearly as strongly in terms of his potential and ceiling at that moment as these two guys are. They are far more polished as passers currently than Nathan was when he came out. You've got to go and get these guys early. And if you're a team that doesn't have immediate needs, somebody like Toronto at 7, build for the future and take one of these guys.
That's where it gets interesting, is projecting what teams could potentially select these Canadian quarterbacks. And let's talk about the NFL influence for a second, because I believe that's helped specifically Taylor Elgersma become a legitimate prospect in the eyes of many CFL talent evaluators, that NFL bump, if you will. And then we're going to have to watch the NFL draft and see how that plays out, because there's a chance that both of these guys are selected in the later rounds, most people projecting the sixth or the seventh. I hesitate to say a certain round because you never know what can happen in a draft, but it seems that way, or become undrafted free agents. And then a lot of their future is going to depend on the situation. Like for Taylor Elgersma, for example, I think it's best if he ends up on an NFL roster with a team that's willing to give him at least a year just to develop. So that means that there's a legitimate veteran starter there, an entrenched backup, and perhaps even number three who has some experience, where you can just put Elgersma on the practice roster and allow him to develop. With Rourke, I think it's a little bit different because of how well he played at Indiana, but the injury is what is holding teams up down there, which I think has sort of pushed him to the back of the draft or potentially being an undrafted free agent. But a similar type of situation, I think, could benefit him. Now, if that plays out and they're, let's say, seventh round picks or UDFAs, well, we've seen guys like that go high in the CFL draft time and time again. We've seen guys go higher in the CFL draft when they've been higher NFL draft picks. So when we start projecting teams, you know, you talk to people around the league, and yes, we're talking about on the field talent, but JC, you well know this for what it's done for the BC Lions. Nathan Rourke has changed the intrigue factor from an entire franchise standpoint with the BC Lions. We saw it on his rise up. Ratings were up. Traffic was up. Social media impressions were up. That's why he's getting that big $200,000 marketing check from Mar Doman, is because he actually moves the needle. So when you talk about the NFL draft, and I know people hate the comparisons here, but when you're making a decision as it relates to the quarterback, oftentimes owners are involved, and owners are involved with those top high picks. But you know, when I talk to people around the league, I look at a team like the Hamilton Tiger Cats, who have Bolivar Mitchell coming off a great season, but an unsure future. We know Scott Milanovich likes Taylor Powell, but if you think, let's say in this instance, a Curtis Rourke has a higher ceiling and he has that legitimate NFL interest in him, I think that could be a guy that I've been told from people around the league that Scott Milanovich would be into. And oh, by the way, he played just down the road in Oakville, and you could sell and market that. So not only are you getting a bona fide, legitimate quarterback prospect who happens to be Canadian, but you're getting someone who can help put butts in seats and drive real tangible interest. To me, fellas, that's what's been lacking from this conversation is, yes, the player has to be good enough. And give credit to Danny Maciocha for saying it out loud in Quebec. He will tell you flat out that if it is between a player who has roots to that province and another player, and everything else is the same, he's taking the player from Quebec. So in this instance, I can't understand for the life of me why, if you have a chance to find a Nathan Rourke that can literally change your franchise, build intrigue, heaven forbid, bring in more revenue to perhaps bump up your paycheck as a GM, head coach, the rest, why you wouldn't take that opportunity instead of drafting, with all due respect, another run-of-the-mill offensive lineman? I actually think it would be great. People are going to laugh, but if a Canadian quarterback was selected number one overall, because that's really actually marketable instead of an offensive lineman. Like, I'm not holding anything against them at all, and I'm not saying the Calgary Stampeders are going to draft a Canadian quarterback or that they should. But we've seen it with Nathan Rourke. The rise there is real. We've seen it with Trey Ford. The interest in the Elks spiked when he became the starter, and fans wanted to see it. They were pushing for it. I think that's part of the reason why he's now ended up as a franchise guy, is because there's literal public pressure there for it. And with pressure, I think, comes more intrigue. So it's a long-winded way of saying that there's a lot to play out here with the quarterback process. But I think what JC said is on point, that we should start to see these prospects pushed up the board if they are legitimate, because if they do pan out and you give them proper time to develop, like Nathan Rourke had with Michael Riley, that it can be a real game changer, not only for your team, but the league as a whole.
The other factor I think that is playing at least some role in the decision-making is the fact that CFL teams are having a hard time recruiting American quarterbacks. And I think that is a problem that will persist, partly because you now have some college quarterbacks who are playing until they're 26 years old, right?
And
in the collegiate
money.
Ranks. And I was going to get to that, but they're playing 6-7 years of college. And especially at the quarterback position, they are getting paid real money, right? Back in the day, you were playing 4 years, and generally you did not transfer. You were stuck at the same school, even if you weren't necessarily a starter, or even if you were only going to get the chance to start as a senior, and then you'd come out of college age 22, having never made a dollar in your life. And if the NFL is not there, then you come to the CFL. Pretty easy to recruit quarterbacks in that world if you're the CFL. Now, you've got guys coming out at 24, 25, 26. Some of them have made $2 million, $5 million, $10 million. And if the NFL doesn't come calling, it's like, well, I'm already only a few years away from collecting a pension because I'm a million years old. Why would I ever come to Canada and make a whopping 75K Canadian when I can get a cushy college radio analyst job, or I can get a cushy college media gig wherever I was a star? Mind you, that's also an issue because now they play at five different schools. They don't play at one place for their entire tenure. But I think the point that I'm trying to make is that the college landscape has changed so much. It is very much bleeding into the Canadian CFL landscape. And so if you're having a hard time recruiting the same caliber of American quarterback, that only makes the value of Canadian quarterbacks go even higher, because the choice isn't, oh, do we bring in the Canadian quarterback or like the bona fide D1 3-year starter who's got the perfect tools for our league? That guy's not nearly as likely to come up now. Now it's more like, do we take the Canadian quarterback or do we take the 2-year starter who played 3 years at JUCO and has a couple of warts maybe from his personal life or his background? If that's the comparison, that arguably just raises the stock of guys like Taylor Elgersma or Curtis Rourke even higher.
Yeah. On other positions going down the rest of your mock draft, Hodge, 7, I think, is a spot where I take a little bit of issue. Tiger Shanks to the Toronto Argonauts. That's a spot that I feel strongly could be where a quarterback comes off the board, specifically Taylor Elgersma, because of his ties to that organization. But I've come across a little bit more, shall we say, lukewarm on Shanks after watching him. I think he was a little bit too heavy when he played. He's cut some weight, but the fact that he wasn't able to test at his pro day scares me a little bit. He wasn't tested all that much with true pass sets, so I wonder if he can stick long-term at tackle in the CFL. When you go into round 2, I really like Devin Verisuk at number 9 to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I think his combination of athleticism and their positional need makes a lot of sense there. I love Jeremiah Ojo at 12 to the Ottawa Red Blacks. I think he's a guy who could really contribute for them. And as you get down the list, some of the more underrated guys, Mac Ballantyne out of Alberta, the defensive back to the Calgary Stampeders, at 20, I think that's a natural fit, that they would absolutely click their heels and jump over the moon if he fell to them at that spot. Just a lot of really solid picks as we get later in this draft, which I know is incredibly difficult to stack out as you go through this process. It goes through so many different iterations, so really good job on that.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Let's go to the next topic. JC, you wrote a column assessing the legacy of outgoing CFL commissioner Randy Ambrosi. Do you really believe his tenure atop the league will age well?
I really do. I think it will with time. And for those of you who haven't necessarily read the column, I encourage you to do so. Essentially, my point was that the results that Ambrosi put forth for the league were not bad by any standards. They were maybe not rousing successes, but for the most part, it was the status quo. A lot of times he was faced with extremely difficult situations, and ultimately, the league is in a better place right now than when he took over it, despite the fact that we've gone through a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic and three ownership crises. We've now got the strongest ownership in league history. We've got strong ratings. We've got good attendance. All these things are trending in the right direction, and the league itself, through the salary cap announcement, whether or not that actually impacts the players or not, is showing that there is revenue growth. It's not what Ambrosi promised, but there is growth there. The problem with Ambrosi is he could never control the narrative. The optics were always bad, and he kept shooting himself in the foot right from that very first promise of saying, I'm going to double league revenue, because that ultimately is the thing that the Board of Governors, the owners of these teams, looked at and said, okay, that's your promise. We'll give you the time to try and do that. And he never did. He never improved franchise valuations. He never got an expansion team through the door. And we can debate whether those things were reasonable at all to expect, but ultimately he promised them and he said they were right around the corner and he spoke positively and he made those the things that he would be judged on and ultimately the things he failed on. So when we get past the time where we remember the exact things that he said and all of those grandiose statements and those fade into memory, then we'll look at the place the league is now and say, he actually did a pretty decent job in some pretty challenging circumstances. But right now, his legacy is tainted by all of those statements that he made and the big promises that he never delivered on, which no one was forcing him to make.
JC's column was excellent. You need to go to 3downnation.com and find it because it was so well laid out, and it kind of made me feel a little bit bad in a way for Randy Ambrosi because he's gotten roasted so much, and I mean rightfully so, with the global program, the statistics snafu that still has not been fixed, putting timelines on that, and then it wasn't met, and then of course, you know, probably the biggest blunder, there's a bunch of small ones we're not mentioning either, was going to the government and asking for 150 Millie cool without a plan of how that was going to help the league survive. I will give you and Ambrosi the fact that he went through an unprecedented situation in the pandemic and kept the league alive and has brought in the most stable ownership arguably in the league's history. From my opinion, I think it is the most stable ownership. It took going through, you know, that small Gary Stern era in Montreal partially to get there, but nonetheless, the league is there and revenues have been up the last couple of years, but the league just doesn't want to tell the players that. So, you know, that's on the league being a little bit more honest, I think, in its partnership with those players to figure out that entire issue. But nonetheless, you know, I do think that when you read JC's column, it's really well balanced because it calls the balls and strikes. It talks about where Ambrosi missed, but it also talks about the difficulties he was dealt with and what he helped the league with. So I think it's well taken, and it kind of makes me think that, you know, maybe with age, cheese isn't so bad after all.
I thought that was going to come full circle. Yeah, I agree with your take, JC. There are some things that any commissioner will get flack for that in reality is simply not their fault, right? Or is something that was totally unavoidable. And yeah, Randy Ambrosi, by no fault of his own, was met with multiple ownership crises and a global pandemic, which, at least by CFL standards, was an unprecedented crisis. There have been global pandemics before, but not with the Canadian Football League in full operation. So to that end, I agree that I think some elements of his commissionership will age well. Some of them will be remembered more fondly than maybe fans gave him a hard time for. That being said, I think a lot of the criticism, for the reasons we've laid out, was warranted. The league went far too dark during the pandemic. I still think that the league should have come out and promised fans, yes, we are going to return to the field no matter what. And the reason for that is twofold. One, if you end up actually coming back and playing, then you're the hero who promised success and then delivered it. And secondly, if the league folds, then who cares what you told the fans? You don't exist anymore. They don't have anyone to be mad at. The league literally is no longer a thing. So I thought that was a major blunder. There have been other major blunders, but I do think that the stage has been set for the new commissioner of the CFL, Mr. Johnston, to come in and build big off of this foundation that's been set. I think optimally, Mr. Rambrosi would have experienced growth, certainly over the last few years since we've been able to kind of rebound and rebuild from the pandemic. But though there have been some years of lost growth, I think that Stu has been well set up to potentially see some of that growth and use this new foundation as a springboard. So it might take, I don't know, what's the timeline, 5 years, 10 years? But I do think that one day people will fondly remember Randy Ambrosi's tenure, or if not fondly, it'll certainly be more warm than the thought is now.
Yeah, and people, I think, genuinely appreciated how much he was passionate for the league, certainly at the start of his tenure. It was really that pandemic stretch that spoiled things for Randy, because he lost a lot of people's trust and a lot of people's respect during that period, because they were looking for something to cling to, something that was solid in a world that was uncertain, and he couldn't provide that to him. Now, I do think as a society in general, we are too harsh to leaguers, both political and private, for how they handled the pandemic, because ultimately everyone was flying blind at that point. Nobody really knew what was going on or where it was going to go or how to truly handle it. And we need to remember that. And I think as time goes on, we will give people more grace for it as a result. But he did taint his legacy and how people saw him from then on because of how he handled that. But ultimately, the thing that you can pin on Randy Ambrosi right now is the argument for why he was a good commissioner is what you just spoke to now, Hodge, is that Stuart Johnson is taking this over, and maybe for the first time in the league's history, he's not inheriting any existential crises. Right? You look around the league, there are things to do. There are priorities. You probably want to, you know, focus on the television broadcast rights and see growth there. You may be looking at the situation in Calgary and wondering how to force through a new stadium there. But none of those things are challenging the health or the well-being of the league right now, or I should say its existence, or the existence of any one franchise, which typically there's at least one of those things going on whenever a new commissioner takes over. There hasn't been at the end of Randy's tenure, and I think that's a testament to some of the work that he's done.
The Stampeders have unveiled details for the first ever Stampede Bowl, including a halftime performance from Bret Michaels, a $25,000 wager between the team presidents, and more. The old catchphrase tease. What did you make of this, Mr. Hodge?
I like it. I think it's really good. We have been very critical of some teams for not bringing interesting, innovative marketing ideas. And this is an example I think we can point to and say, hey, this is cool. Now, is Bret Michaels an act that's going to rile people up, especially people under the age of 35? No, maybe not in the same way that some of BC's acts have brought in a young crowd. But you got to start somewhere. He is a well-known name with some well-known songs. JC, can you name a Poison song? I'm curious.
I have no idea who Bret Michaels is or who Poison is.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I grew up listening to Poison.
27 and lame, so I don't know popular music or things from the olden times. It's a twofer with me.
You want to ask about the backup Canadian long snapper on a small NAIA program, JC will tell you. If you want to know one Poison song, he's like, what's Poison? Am I supposed to drink it? What's going on? I do like a lot of Poison's music. I grew up with an old school rock and roll dad. That being said, I think that this is clever. I think that this is fun. I think tying a game to the Calgary Stampede is something that probably should have existed for the last 50 years, right? We've seen the Toronto Argonauts tie one of their games to CNE, which I think has been very successful there with the exhibition that goes on right next door to BMO Field. I think this is great. And I think that every team needs multiple events like this every single year. We've seen it with the Gravy Bowl that BC has started in recent years. The Banjo Bowl is probably the best example of it. Granted, that's over 20 years old at this point. But new innovative ideas. Like, it's not enough anymore to be like, hey, everybody, we have family game in October. And that's our special event. And it's like, well, awesome, you're doing stuff for families, but you're hosting 10 games and one of them is remotely interested. Like, what is going on? Like, you need to have special events that broaden people's imaginations and capture people's excitement happening all the time. And it can be as stupid or as silly or as what, like, look at the best rivalries in college football. They'll have the boot bowl and the teams play and the winner gets to keep a dirty old disgusting boot and somebody drinks a beer out of it. Does it make sense? Not really, but you've been doing it for 100 years and people get so excited. Look at the Panda game, one of the best marketed games in all of Canadian football. It's U Sports, right? They fill TD Place. The Red Blacks almost never fill TD Place. U Sports can fill TD Place with a fun, exciting idea. And that's embedded in history and tradition, and I get that it's hard to start history and tradition, but if you're not swinging at pitches, you're just going to strike out. So you may as well strike, hit the bat, and I think that the Stampeders have done a good job of that here. The wager with the money going to the winning team's Purolator Tackle Hunger Drive, I think is a great kind of charitable element to this. I like all of this. This is great. We need more of this. Less bland and boring ideas. And I dare say, if you're working at a first CFL team and your marketing person says, hey, I have an amazing idea for our themes this year. We're going to do this crazy new thing where it's country night and we're going to play country music and, you know, and that's it. Like, I'm sorry, you need a more imaginative person. You need a more qualified person. We need big, bold ideas. I'm not saying don't do country night, but country night should be like at the bottom of the list of what is most exciting. Stampede Bowl, this is smart. It should get extra people into McMahon Stadium. And I think that this is long overdue.
Yeah, I'm stunned that this wasn't a thing before, that there had never been collaboration between the Stampeders and the Stampede to this degree. And it's better late than never, in my opinion. I love the fact that there is marketing behind this, that there's an actual tangible trophy that's going to be handed out. I think that adds an element to this that fans will appreciate. What I do think they missed the mark on a little bit here, guys, is the $25,000 wager, because I love that they're giving back to the food bank, but this is a missed opportunity to fund McMahon's replacement. The Stampeders should be trying to get this in straight cash from their opponents just to try and build a new venue. It seems like that would have been the smarter play.
To me, this is a tap-in. As you guys have somewhat alluded to, this should have happened before. It's happening now. You need to make your tap-ins, to steal a golf term, to have a chance to make par. And the CFL needs to start making some of their tap-ins to build on this foundation we talked about that Randy Ambrosi and the league has created to this point. This, to me, should be a great event. I'd like to see the team presidents perhaps distill a WWE idea get in a steel cage match, Jay McNeil versus Wade Miller. That would be great for $25,000 with it hanging over the top, maybe on that old speaker at McMahon Stadium that they had to take down. But anyways, nonetheless, I'm obviously joking around. It just adds another intrigue and layer. So kudos to Jay McNeil, his team with Calgary. And I'm sure there was some collaboration with the Blue Bombers as well.
Yes, and I have spoken to Jay McNeil multiple times, and one of the things he said and other CFL executives have said that is that as competitive as CFL teams are on the field, off the field, they're very open and collaborative. So whether this was the Bombers sharing some of their secret sauce with the Stampeders or them getting ideas from other teams, whatever, I think that's great. I think it's awesome to share and collaborate, say, here's what worked for us, here's what didn't work for us, because at the end of the day, off the field, these teams are not competing. Off the field, they are very much in the same boat, trying to grow revenues, trying to get people, especially in a place like Calgary, back into the stands with attendance falling there over the last few years. Obviously, as JC alluded to, they don't have a beautiful building in Calgary to draw people in. You're going to have to get creative and find other ways to do it. This is one of them. Also, before we go to Hodges Heritage Moment, I got to add this since Dunk used a golf analogy. I have, for the last many years, described myself as a scratch golfer. And the reason why is because I'm a terrible golfer. And I thought that scratch golfer meant that you're like so bad. You're like scratching up the cart.
No, it
like
means you're elite.
I just learned recently it means you're an amazing golfer. So I feel like such a liar now. Because for years, people have been like, oh, do you golf? I'm like, oh, I'm a scratch golfer. And I've always kind of gotten weird looks. And now I know why. It's because people are like, what the hell are you talking about? There's no way you're a scratch golfer. But I thought it meant you suck. So no, I suck. I apologize to people who I lied to. I didn't know.
It's amazing.
You probably told them you were a scratch golfer and followed it up with the story of the one time that you drove a green. And they were like, okay, checks out.
I don't know. I literally
drove a par
once.
Four. You drove a par four.
Drove a par four.
One time, right?
Doubtful. Par three, maybe. But I golf like once
or twice a
year.
Okay, so your golf terms need some help here. Because when you tell me that you drove a green, that signals that you hit the green in one shot on a par four. Because when you say drove, that insinuates that you're using your driver.
So maybe I teed the green then. No? Maybe?
You hit the green on a par three. Hit the green in regulation.
Yeah, well, that's good for me. That's good for me. I'm not out here competing with anybody else.
On like a 100-yard hole.
Yeah, for me, that's still pretty good. I golf twice a year, if that. I have the same clubs I've had since I was 13.
I'll teach you some golf terms if you really need it. If I wanted to know about curling, I know where to go. I ask Jean-Auge because he knows.
I'll hook you up with the curling. Yes. And I am not a scratch curler, but I am a very good amateur curler. I would never compare myself to the people you see out there doing amazing things on television. I wouldn't call myself a scratch curler, but I'm definitely not a scratch golfer as much as I've apparently lied about that for like the last 10 years.
Okay, we got to keep it moving here. There's CFL interviews waiting. Let's go.
Yes. Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2006, the CFL's Board of Governors voted not to bankroll the Ottawa Renegades after owner Bernie Gleiberman stopped funding the team 2 weeks prior. This meant the team would be forced to suspend operations after just four seasons in the league. The Renegades went 23-49 and made zero playoff appearances. The players such as Kerry Joseph, Obi Khan, Corey Banks, and Josh Rannick became household names. Ottawa would have to wait 8 years for football to return to the city, with Henry Burris and the Red Blacks hitting the field in 2014. And if you can see in my backdrop, I've got a Renegades football signed by a bunch of members of that team. Let's go to the three-minute drill.
The Ottawa Red Blacks have extended head coach Bob Dyche through 2026, adding 1 year to his existing deal. Was that deserved?
It was, but I'm curious as to why this wasn't also accompanied by an extension for GM Sean Burke. Interesting. Defensive lineman Josh Banks retired after four seasons with the BC Lions. How will you remember him?
I will remember him as one of the most underrated players in the CFL. He didn't do anything flashy. He wasn't a great pass rusher, but extremely technically sound and respected by his teammates for what he was able to do on the field. the Rough Rider Foundation invested $1.8 million in Saskatchewan amateur football. How great is that?
It's awesome, man. The Rough Rider Foundation and the Rough Riders in general help support football in that province, and it's great to see that money going back, just like the BC Lions have done, and I'm sure other teams might do it in smaller donations, but I really like this large amount going, I don't want to say largely, but a bunch to new helmets in that province. The Toronto Argonauts have brought back global punter Josh Haggerty. Is that the right move for the Argos?
Yes, they didn't have any experience at that spot, and it's possible that somebody beats out Haggerty for the job, but it's not like the signing would have broken the bank. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders signed Aaron Patrick, who once tried to sue the NFL. What happened there?
Well, Patrick was pushed out of bounds in a game against the Los Angeles Chargers at SoFi Stadium, stepped on essentially a carpet that was on the sideline covering some broadcast cables, slipped, and tore his ACL, which eventually led to him being released by the Denver Broncos. He sued the NFL, the Chargers, ESPN, and a bunch of other entities involved in the stadium in order to compensate him for the injury. It was ruled he couldn't sue the NFL and the Chargers because that would violate the CBA, but then he settled the rest of it out of court. So this is a warning to all the stadium crews around the CFL, to TSN, to everyone at Mosaic Stadium, watch where you put those carpets now that Aaron Patrick is around. The Atlanta Falcons have brought back former all-CFL cornerback DeAndre Alford. Was that the right move?
It was. I like it. He can still contribute at cornerback, and this guy, since leaving the CFL, has earned almost $4 million. One of those great CFL to NFL stories, fellas. Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke has acknowledged that his mid-season addition to the BC Lions was, quote, tough, unquote, on the locker room. Is that stating the obvious at this point?
It is. It was nice to hear Nathan Rourke comment about this, but I don't think this was unclear given what we heard from the team after the end of the season. The roster for this year's U-Sports East-West Bowl has been set. Which one prospect, JC, are you most excited to watch?
Give me Shamar McBean from UBC because I know he's a legit Homer. He's a legit 4-5 guy. I've clocked him myself. I think he's going to show some real speed for the scouts in attendance. NFL draft guru Matt Miller told you that Canadian receiver Alec Iomatter could be a number one receiver in the NFL. Do you believe him?
I do, man, especially if he can stay healthy. I think he has some upside still to be reached. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers posted a $7 million operating profit for 2024. Is that a big number, Hodge?
It is, and I give the Bombers a lot of credit. They are reinvesting a lot of this money back into the stadium at Princess Auto Stadium so that it remains a top-notch facility for decades to come. John Ryan is being inducted into the Saskatchewan Sports Hall of Fame. Is he a worthy choice?
Of course he is. You might as well name the building after him. There's nobody more sassy than John Ryan. Regina-born former CFL QB Mike Beaudry has taken a coaching job at Army. Are you excited for the U.S. Army to finally recognize the amazingness of Canadian quarterbacks?
Yes, it's about time. You know, I asked this question to a bunch of CFL head coaches and general managers saying, what do these Canadian quarterbacks have to do to earn more respect from the American coaches? Well, now I can point to this. The Army is hiring these guys, okay? If you don't want them, I can't understand it now because the Army is all in on our Canadian quarterbacks in the United States.
We thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. For Justin Dunk and JC Abbott, I'm John Hodge. We'll see you next Wednesday.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.